Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, September 25th, come on in. Welcome to the show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Today on the show, we're talking about what some call gray divorce. For most demographic groups in this country, the divorce rates are actually falling. One of the exceptions is people 65 and over. Among that group, the divorce rate is going up. Today on the show, we'll explore why. We'll also talk about the unique challenges and opportunities that come with splitting later in life. And we would really love to hear from you today. We think some personal stories would really help sort of elucidate this broader conversation. We know it's a tough conversation to have, but we really encourage you to call 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. Our prompt questions today: have you been through a gray divorce or know someone who has? How did it work out for the couples and the rest of the family? Again, that number is 888-477-9499. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And by the way, I'm really interested in the multi-generational impact, because if your retired parents decide to divorce, it changes the caregiving aspects of it, right? You thought mom and dad take care of each other. A lot of times kids have to step up. So there's a lot of impact there. So I'd love to hear some stories. 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And by the way, it's Thursday, which means DJ of the day. I love to say it like that with a little bit of a different voice.
Good reverb.
But today, you know, the theme could be interesting. Longtime love, you know, heartbreak, family, a lot of different themes for today. So choose this great song and email studio2@whyy.org by 12:30. And executive producer Kevin will make a choice.
Make a choice, and we'll announce it at the end of the hour. Let's start with a trio of local news stories, Cherry.
Yes. Top story. The Pennsylvania Treasury is planning to loan about $500 million to counties that may be low on cash thanks to the budget impasse, which is continuing. Pennsylvania State Treasurer Stacey Garrity, who also is a Republican that is challenging Governor Josh Shapiro in next year's gubernatorial race. She made that announcement Wednesday. She said her office is reaching out to counties to assess their needs for low-cost loans at about 4.5% there. County schools, pre-K programs, social services programs, they've all been pleading for the governor and state lawmakers to pass this budget so that they can get access to state funds. Some counties have reserves, so they're using that money to get through. But others are operating on fumes, and there seems to be no sight, you know, end in sight for this impasse. And Garrity, she's saying she's doing this, you know, as the treasurer, and she doesn't really need impact from the General Assembly to do this. But other folks are saying, look, it's a political moment. She's able to seize this moment, this inability of the governor to get this budget passed. She's criticized him and some of her rhetoric as the challenger of Governor Josh Shapiro. So folks are saying, is this a political moment, or is she really trying to help the counties here in Pennsylvania? By the way, Governor Shapiro has basically been this go-between between the two parties. As you know, Democrats control the House, the GOP controls the Senate, and they are far apart on a number of issues.
Yeah, my mind's in a pretzel just trying to analyze this. So the municipalities, the local governmental bodies need money because the state won't give it to them. So the state's going to loan them money at 4.5%. It's crazy. The political impact, who knows? I mean, this is such, every part of this is sort of not something you see every day. Mm-hmm. So who knows what the political impact would be? I guess it sort of burnishes Garrity's credentials as a problem solver. That's something that Shapiro likes to claim for himself. But, you know, I don't know how much this will break through. But it is kind of crazy just to think about the money flowing back and forth and the reasons why arrows pointing in so many different directions. Story number two now. Prosecutors are releasing details on a sophisticated burglary ring that targeted Asian American business owners in the Philadelphia suburbs. Vinny Vella had a good write-up on this in The Inquirer, all about the investigation into this thieving operation. It's a 10-person ring. They surveilled their targets using disguised cell phone cameras and phony food deliveries, as well as Wi-Fi jammers to conduct these break-ins. Four men have been convicted so far. They're living in New York. They're Colombian nationals, all four of those men. Prosecutors believe the same group pulled similar schemes in Kentucky and New Jersey.
So interesting. You know, this crime ring was so sophisticated. I mean, you mentioned that they disguised cell phones. I mean, they had a cell phone disguise with grass. That's how they were surveilling folks. And they targeted, you know, Asian-owned businesses so that because the folks tend to have cash at home. And so that was why they targeted them. But apparently the head honcho was young, 22 years old, based in New York. He was the one telling people where to go and how much to sell goods for. And it just goes to show, I mean, as theft detection gets more sophisticated, the thieves sort of level up as well.
Exactly, right? It's the cat and mouse game, the tit for tat. Not trying to make light of what happened here. And obviously glad that prosecutors were able to bring these folks to justice. But of course, we've seen the rapid proliferation of these Wi-Fi enabled cameras.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to have them now. Most people have the Ring camera, but there's lots of different types of brands. And so this is a way to counteract those. Mm-hmm. And the question is then what's going to be the response from the folks who provide the security apparatuses for folks, for their businesses, for their homes? And
you're going to have to get something else.
This game probably goes back as far as the first person who invented locks, right? Mm-hmm. And it just goes on and on and on. So I thought this was an interesting window into modern crime and modern crime enforcement, and just one of those things that I hadn't thought about before reading this story.
Yeah, and police had to use technology to catch him. So everybody's, you know, leveling up here. Third story, the city of Philadelphia filed a lawsuit against two companies that allegedly deceived consumers into believing that their plastic bags were actually recyclable. The city claims that Bimbo Bakeries, they own Thomas's and Sara Lee Bread, as well as S.C. Johnson, the company that owns Ziploc, put those little recycling arrows on their plastic bags, despite the fact that they knew that those bags are rarely recycled, especially in Philadelphia. This type of deceit, you probably heard of it, it's called greenwashing. It's when companies sort of fool consumers into thinking that their products or packaging are better for the environment, you know, sort of assuming that consumers want more environmentally friendly products. And so people will lean towards you. But this lawsuit says that the companies, they knew that these were not going to be recycled and that they misled consumers and that they ought to be fined. Those types of plastic, I mean, the plastic bags end up in landfills a lot of times, you know, littering the city. And so they're like, come on, guys, you see the little recycle thing. You got to question it a lot of time. Especially,
well, it's the same
plastic
symbol that's actually on the city recycling bins.
Ooh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So obviously people do associate it with recycling. Obviously, I have no idea whether this lawsuit stands a chance, but I hadn't even considered that companies were doing this before, so at least raised awareness. I mean, for me, anytime I see a plastic bag, I kind of assume it's not going to be recycled.
Yeah.
So I mean, not to say I'm a genius, I don't think I would have been fooled by this particular marketing tactic, but it seems like at the very least an icky thing to do. I'm actually, this is something that's changed since a show that we did, I can't even remember, maybe it was a year ago, about
recycling. And people were so upset.
The thing that I learned that stuck with me is just how onerous it is to recycle any type of plastic. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels like a bit of a scam.
Yeah.
I just try to avoid, you know, plastic altogether.
And what's crazy is if you put things that are not recyclable in the recycling bin, it mucks up the whole recycling process. And
right.
So they're just like, you're not just misleading consumers, but you're also mucking up the recycling process. So stop, company.
They have said that they might use, not in Philadelphia specifically, but in general, deploy AI technology to pick out.
Ooh,
those.
AI.
Yeah, because there's all this like this refuse coming through to pick out like the plastic to make the process more efficient, just because we were talking about technology earlier. By the way, before we go.
Yes.
Just want to pour one out real quick for Iron Hill Breweries. You heard the news.
Yeah.
They're closing all 19 of their locations around the region.
Kind of
at the vanguard long ago of these microbreweries, which became so popular. I think Iron Hill started in Newark, Delaware back in 96.
Wow.
19 locations, all of them closing. And like a year ago, they were talking about expanding. So I don't know what happened there.
I don't know. I've gone there when I lived in Delaware. I went a few times to get their little fish tacos. I'm not a big beer person, but I liked it.
And they had good fish tacos?
They had... decent fish tacos.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe that's why
they're closing. And they were good. I liked it, but there were always people in there. So I'm surprised. I was very surprised.
I thought it was always packed every time
I
went.
Yeah, every time I've gone. So I'm kind of surprised.
And I thought it was like the perfect, it's like the median microbrewery experience.
Yeah.
It wasn't like crazy great, but it was never bad.
No.
The food was not crazy great, but it was never bad.
Exactly.
The beer
that's
was not crazy great, but it was never bad.
That's all
and
you
it
need.
Felt like it was always full. So I am curious, like, what the backstory of how
like,
it sort of collapsed.
What in the world happened?
So quickly. Iron Hill, by the way, is a reference to a geographic location in Delaware, I'm quite sure.
Wow. So sad to see them go. Like,
salute
you know.
To Delaware. Salute to Iron Hill.
Yeah.
You served us well for many, many years. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about
Gray divorce.
Folks 65 and over are actually getting divorced more frequently at greater rates.
Why?
We'll talk about why. We'll talk about some of the implications. We want to hear from you if you've been through this process. Really, if you've been through this over age 50 at all, give us a call. 888-477-9499.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Tammy Wynette topped the country charts back in 1968 with D-I-V-O-R-C-E. Her ballad about a young couple divorcing and trying to shield their young son from that reality. And for a long time, it was a song that really captured the face of divorce.
But today, divorce looks different. The divorce rate is actually falling among younger couples. But it's rising among those 65 and up. And according to the most recent data, more than a third of adults going through divorce are now over 50.
In popular media, it's called gray divorce. Today, we'll explore why it's on the rise and how divorcing in older age comes with different challenges and opportunities. Joining us now is Lauren Harris, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at the University of New Hampshire. Lauren, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Let's also welcome Andrew Hatherly, certified divorce financial analyst and host of the Gray Divorce podcast. Andrew, nice to see you.
Nice to see you guys, too. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, and for everyone listening at home, on the road, and elsewhere, you can participate in the conversation as well. The questions of the day are this. Have you been through a gray divorce or know someone who has? How did it work out for the couple and the rest of the family? We'd love to hear from you. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, share the video and then leave your comments in the live chat.
So Lisa has a theory for why a gray divorce is on the rise. Here's Lisa's theory, okay, one of our listeners. People are living longer and realizing they don't want to be with the person they've been with for 40 or 50 years because people change over time. And specifically, more women are realizing they can have a good life without being held down by men they really don't like or love anymore. Okay, Lauren Harris, is that a pretty good summary of what's going on here? What might be driving the trend that we've been talking about so far today?
So that is at least part of it. Part of what's going on here. So we do see that older adulthood looks very different today than it did a generation ago or two generations ago. So if you think of how your grandparents were at 60 or 70, how we are today at 60 and 70 is going to be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So we are living a bit longer. And so we see a lot of older adults are now saying, I don't want to spend the next 30 years with this person. Our great grandparents might have said, five more years, that's fine. But we're living so much longer. We want a little bit more going on in our life. So there is a part there that older adults today, people in their 50s and 60s are saying, I want a next chapter of my life and I don't want it to be with this person. So yeah, that's definitely part of it. Another big piece is that we have empty nesting happening. Mm. And so a lot of older adults are saying, you know, I was staying together for the children. We had these young kids, we were raising them together. We wanted to keep our marriage solid while we were raising children. By the time you hit your 50s, 60s, 70s, those children have launched. They are full adults at this point. They are out on their own. And so we're seeing that older adults don't stick together for the children when the children are adults. And they are now in the house by themselves. The children are gone. They're empty nesting. They're now in retirement. They are spending 24 hours a day looking at each other, realizing they don't have a lot in common anymore. They don't get along the way that they used to. They were staying together for the kids. They don't have common interests. They think, I don't want to do this for the next 30 years. I want to be on my own. I want to live the life that is a better fit for me.
Yeah. And Andrew, would love to hear from you as well, because I mean, a lot of circumstances in life have sort of shifted over the past 20, 30 years that makes it easier, I think, for people to even make this kind of decision. Can you give your take on what's happening and discuss those aspects as well?
Yes. First, I wanted to piggyback on something Lauren said. She mentioned the empty nest syndrome. And she also referred also to what I call the crowded house syndrome. This is when both spouses are retired and they realize, oh, maybe I don't want to spend 24 hours a day with this person. And that ties in also with what Lauren said about longevity. People are living longer and longer, and they're waking up and thinking, you know, maybe I don't want to spend the rest of my life with this person. And that ties in with what we've seen in the growth in the personal development and self-help industry over the last 20, 30 years. I mean, you look back 20 or 30 years, I can think, okay, Tony Robbins and maybe a couple of other self-help gurus, but now there's dozens of them, and people are reading these books and thinking, you know, I've got maybe 20 or 30 years left in my life. You know, I want to maximize it and make the most out of it as possible. But you're right to answer your question, Cherry. Yes, there's a greater acceptance of divorce in society. And I think the baby boomers are very much a divorcing generation. Mm. And as they get older, they're bringing that into their gray years. And gray divorce is typically defined as over age of 50. And so it's really the growth rates we're seeing now is the baby boomers' age is the over 65 group.
And so one thing we haven't kind of touched on yet, and I'm curious if you have a perspective on this, Lauren Harris, is how folks changing financial positions impact this entire conversation. Because if we go back, you know, many decades, I think at this point, there was a sense that people might stay together because they're financially codependent. And I'm sure that's still true in some cases, although I wonder if it's less true than it once was and then how it feeds into this broader trend. Thoughts on that, Lauren?
Yeah, so it's complicated, but we do know that women have been the instigators of divorce for the past 100 years. Mm. So even when women weren't working outside the home for pay, as we do today, we still saw that women were initiating divorce. But you are right. We have much more financial equality between men and women than we've basically ever had before. And so now women can say, I'm going to leave this marriage. I have my own 401k. I have my own pension. I have my own form of income. I don't need a spouse for that reason. Women can work outside the home still through their 60s, earn money that way. I'm sure we'll talk about, but we see that women have historically taken a bit of a step down in their life circumstances after divorce. We see that women do pay a financial penalty for divorce, but that really is narrowing. Men have earned more of the money, have more of the assets, but that is really narrowing. And so now older women in their 50s or 60s or 70s, when they step back from a marriage, when they divorce, that gap between men and women financially is really narrowing. So there is a big part of it there that women are feeling like they financially can, although historically that hasn't so often held them into the marriage the way that we might think that it has. Mm.
Yeah, and I know you have a lot to say about the financial stuff, Andrew. Do you want to weigh in here?
Well, certainly, as Lauren mentioned, the fact that women are increasingly, compared to, say, 30, 40 years ago, in the workforce and running large corporations and doing very much better economically independently, that's a contributing factor to gray divorce, because they realize that they can look after themselves. Now, Lauren alluded to the fact that there are economic consequences of gray divorce, but there are also social consequences. Mm-hmm. And studies have shown that the economic consequences do, in fact, hit women harder than men. They still hit men hard, but Susan Brown and Yifan Lin at Bowling Green have done a study on this. They've done a lot of work. I think they even coined the term gray divorce phenomenon. But they show that women experience a 45% decline in their standard of living on average after late life divorce, whereas men, the decline's a little less, 21%, but it's still a decline. And both parties are typically seeing a split of their net worth. So if the household net worth was $500,000 or $5 million, you know, that's going to be split in two typically after divorce. You know, the implications are, the financial implications for gray divorce are really what make it such a fundamental social issue, mm-hmm. because people don't have the time to recover that they do when they're getting divorced at 65 or 70 or even 55. You know, when you're 30 or 40 and you're getting divorced, you're still going to be working likely for another 30 or 40 years. Your retirement accounts still have a long time to grow. But when you're 2 years or 3 years away from retirement, the implications of what is often the largest financial transaction in our lives are much greater.
Today on the show, we're talking about divorce over 50, mm-hmm. and we want to hear from you. Have you been through one of these so-called gray divorces, or know someone who has? How did it work out for the couple and the rest of the family? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org.
And so, Lauren, I wanted to ask you, because we talk about the finances, but I want to talk about marriage and how marriage has shifted and the expectations of what people expect out of a marriage, because maybe what your grandma or great grandma and grandpa expected marriage to be is very different than what people in the current generations expect. Can you sort of explain those differences and how they've shifted?
Yes, of course. Yeah, Cherry, great question. So a piece of what's going on here when we see gray divorce is that the meaning of marriage and what we expect out of marriage has changed dramatically in the last 100 years or so. So when I think of my own grandparents, they had a little bit more of, we might say like a Leave It to Beaver kind of marriage, where we had a married heterosexual couple. We had a husband going out and working outside the home for pay. We had a wife staying at home, taking care of the home, raising children. So we had what we call a companionate marriage. It's sort of a team. It's very gendered. We can think of, again, breadwinner, husband, stay-at-home mother. And so today, and in the last few decades, we've really shifted what we want out of a marriage and what we expect out of a marriage. So young people today, we are looking for more of a individualistic and emotionally expressive relationship. So something where both partners can lean on each other, depend on each other, share the domestic work, share the child rearing, share the breadwinning. All of those pieces are between the team, that everyone is kind of participating in similar ways. And so I think one of the things that's happening is that older adults are seeing that and thinking, I would like something a little bit more like that. I want my partner to support me. I want my partner to be there for me. I want a friend in my partner. They might be seeing their adult children have those relationships, or their friends have those relationships. Again, one of the reasons we see women tend to initiate divorce is because they want that more friendship. They want that that partnership that they're not seeing in their own marriage. And so we've really seen what we want out of a marriage shift from this sort of split gendered teammate companionate relationship to much more of a friendship, an emotional bond. Finances kind of come into play, sort of linking back, because women are saying, I'm not here just for the financial support. I'm here for a friend and a partner. And so I can support myself financially. That's not the issue. I want a partner in this relationship. And so I can financially afford to leave now. And I'm going to do that because I'm not getting that emotional support. My partner's not showing up for me in that same way.
Can we take a quick tangent based off that, Lauren? Mm-hmm. Is that dynamic you described, the sort of what younger generations are seeking in a life partner, how has that influenced the divorce rates among younger people? Because those have been falling and falling for quite some time. So is that a driver of why we see that trend among younger people? And it does seem maybe coupled with the fact that, no pun intended, that just fewer people are getting married in general. So I'm just curious, Lauren, real quick going into that, and then we'll get back to gray divorce.
Of course. Yeah, there are a lot of pieces going on there. So one of them, as you said, we are just marrying a little bit less often. There is kind of an alarmist view that people are not getting married. We are just a little less often.
A little less. Yeah.
Just a little bit less. The big piece here is also that we're getting married a little bit later.
Yeah.
So we're getting, when we're already financially stable, sort of a late 20s, early 30s, we finished our education, we have a career, we know who we are, we know what we're looking for, we are waiting for the right partner. So we're getting married a little bit later than we historically have. And so that's a big piece of it. But yes, also kind of going back, we are looking for a partner. We are looking for somebody that is going to fulfill us emotionally, show up for us, be there for us. In some ways that can be a little bit of a divorce trigger or a breakup trigger, in that if you're expecting too much from your partner, one person can't fulfill every single need that everybody has. And so we do need to be careful that we are not expecting too much from a partner. But we do see lower divorce rates in more egalitarian relationships, and we are seeing more egalitarian relationships today.
Very interesting. By the way, for those of you listening at home, on the road, and elsewhere, our question of the day is this: been through a great divorce or know someone who has? How did it work out for the couple and the rest of the family? We'd love to hear from you and invite you to join the conversation by calling 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, share this video, but also keep those comments coming in the chat. I want to bring in a caller. We have Lisa calling in from Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow, Lisa. Wow. You're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
So my comment is, first of all, thank you for this, because my mother divorced at age 75 and I divorced at age 55. Certainly financially was a transition and somewhat of a hardship. It was also difficult for our grown children, and I'm including myself in that, because that is something that you're not necessarily expecting as a grown child to go through at that point. But I will have to tell you that both of us, looking in the rearview mirror, are saying we're so happy that we did it. It's hard, but it was validating. It's the right thing. As you said in your comments, we don't need someone to take care of us financially. What I'm looking for and wanted was a partner that I could trust and that I could build a life and experience life with, and who was honest with me. And I didn't get that. And so I decided I'm not going to settle for something less. I don't need to. And my mother at 75, people are like, why did she get divorced at 75? What's the point? And the point was, for the next whatever 20, 30 years, whatever she has, she wanted to be happy. She wanted a different life. And just because she had been married, and she got married at age 17, so that's a long time, 17 to 75.
So true.
But to be courageous enough to say, I'm not gonna accept this. This is not what I want. I'm gonna build a life that I want. I admire her for that.
Lisa, and thank you for this call. Can I ask you real quick before you go, Lisa? You said that ultimately, looking back, it was worth it. What made it worth it for you looking back? Like, what was the reward that after you admitted there was some struggle there? What was the reward that really made it worth it?
So the reward is that, you're not going to change someone else. You have to change. You can only change yourself, right? Like, and so saying that I wanted a partner that was going to love and respect and cherish and honor me, if I was allowing him to do something different, then I was just validating what he was doing. So now I am free to have the possibility of all those things in earnest. And I just feel better about myself. I'm more confident. Yeah. I'm happier. I frankly look better. And it's freeing. It's scary because I also don't have a safety net, right? Like some of my friends, I don't have that financial safety net. If something happens, I am my safety net. But again, the fact that I have the possibility of having the life that I actually want is worth it to me. And apparently, it was worth it to my mom.
And quick follow-up for your mom, because you're her daughter and you look up to her. And I just wonder, your mom had you as a support. So how did the divorce, your mom getting a divorce, affect you, caregiving, plans and things like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it certainly upended all the plans, right? Because nobody plans for a divorce. And so plans have gone out the window. Yeah. We were just having to adjust and accept. But ironically, the same week that I literally found out that my husband had cheated on me was the same week my mother announced that she was leaving my dad. So that was a crushing
seismic
week.
Shift. Yeah.
And you have each other. Yeah.
Absolutely. We had each other. And frankly, because my response to my parents' divorce was basically, wow, finally.
Yeah.
What took you so long? Because, as children, you see that relationship and you can see the healthy parts and the unhealthy parts. So I was happy for her. And for my dad, whom I still, love, I'm like, yeah, well, that's what you get, dude. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Lisa.
Lisa from Atlanta, Georgia.
Great call.
Yeah.
Andrew, I'm curious if you had some response to that call. I mean, Lisa covered a lot of ground.
But what stood out to you? Yeah, that's fascinating because I hear that so often. The idea of I want to live my life and I've got this time left, and that ties into to what we were talking about earlier about some of the causes of gray divorce. One thing I really wanted to point out, because it's been mentioned a couple of times, is the impact of gray divorce on adult children. You know, when you go, and I went through my own gray divorce at age 52. And so many people in their 50s or 60s, when they go into an attorney's office, if they go to an attorney's office, and they ask them, do you have any minor children? And they'll typically, if they're older, answer no. Well, the attorney will go check, and then on to the next question. Adult children, now it's not a legal issue for the attorney to get involved in, so you can kind of understand that. But the impact on adult children is can be profound.
Yeah.
You know, we're dealing with adult children who can range from 20 to 60, going through so many different life phases. And, you know, what if a young couple in their 30s or 40s are seeing their parents divorcing while they're going through marital problems of their own? They may ask themselves, my goodness, if mom and dad can't make it, you know, what chance do we have? And so there's all sorts of stresses on adult children going through when their parents are going through divorce. And surprisingly, it surprised me that my most downloaded podcast episode of the 78 episodes I've done is the impact of gray divorce in adult children, which is really an under-discussed phenomenon.
Yeah, and by the way, I want to read this comment from Ethelind, who I actually spoke to yesterday, and she wrote in and she says, in my family, divorce over 65 never meant bitterness. My grandparents lived apart but never divorced. When my grandfather became ill, my grandmother came back to care for him. The same spirit carried over to my parents. They divorced only after retirement, but my father kept my mother on his benefits to make sure she was cared for. They divorced each other, but they never divorced the family. But when my father became ill, I became his caregiver. But even then, my mother noted his ex-wife stepped in to help when I could not do for him. And I think about her situation where when her dad got ill, and by the way, her father recently passed away, she was his primary caregiver. And I think that, you know, when your parents are married and they're retired, you think it to yourself, mom and dad are going to take, you know, they're going to take care of each other. But when they divorce, the children many times step up and they have to care for both of their parents individually. Can you comment on that part of it a little bit? Because this is something I think most people don't think about that. Yeah. Like one of the kids, the daughter, the son, whoever may need to fill the void there. And I don't know, Andrew, if you want to follow up, or Lauren, if you have a comment on that.
Well, I'll just quickly say you're right. And we'll let Lauren, like to hear what Lauren has to say. Yeah. Adult kids don't bank on being caregivers. You know, they think, well, mom's going to take care of dad. Uh-uh. Mom's going out to live it up for the last 20 years of her 25 years of her life. So that often falls into the children of the older parents. And more often than not, the daughter, they'll see is adopting the typical role. I know, Lauren, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. I do appreciate in this comment, this woman is saying that they divorced each other, but not the family. It sounds like it was her family has kind of set up a nice model of divorce in that they're still taking care of the kids and still realizing that we are a family. We might not love each other, but we do love our children and we want what's best for them and putting them first. And Andrew, yeah, you're absolutely right. So we do know that most often the first person to take care of you in your older age is your spouse. And so I very specifically say spouse. If you are living with a romantic partner, if you are dating somebody, it's really not going to be them. It is your marital relationship, it is your spouse. And so when you don't have a spouse, when you don't have that person in your life to take care of you, we are now facing this big question of who takes care of that person? Who is going to be the caregiver when we don't have a spouse anymore? Either often we have historically seen this through widowhood, but often now a little bit more divorce. And it often is the children or a hired caregiver. And Andrew, you're right. It is most often the daughter. The daughters tend to do care work. Part of it is geographic, who is geographically closest. But it is now a big concern. Who is taking care of the older adults after divorce? Mm. We often think, oh, well, my father will do it. My mother will do it. But after divorce, we often don't see them coming back together. It is a lovely scenario that the caller is talking about. But we don't see that too often.
Doesn't happen every time for sure. We're talking this episode about gray divorce, folks getting divorced 50 and over. Give us a call if you have experience with this or a personal anecdote to share, 888-477-9499. Studio2@whyy.org is the email. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about a trend among seniors called gray divorce and the impact it has for them and their families. Our guests today are Lauren Harris, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at the University of New Hampshire. We also have Andrew Hatherly, Certified Divorce Financial Analyst and host of the Gray Divorce Podcast.
Our question for you this hour, have you been through a gray divorce or know someone who has? How did it work out for the couple and the rest of the family? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. And let's bring in another caller now. This is Jeanette from University City on the line. Jeanette, you're on Studio 2. What's the experience you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, hi. I got divorced. We got divorced in our mid-50s. And I'd have to say it has turned out really well, even though, you know, emotionally, I think, is the hard, sticky part. I mean, I was ready. He wasn't. And but we both went through couples therapy. I had individual therapy. So when the time came around, we had talked it all through. And actually, our therapist just he looked at me and he just said, Jeanette, you don't really want to be married anymore, do you? And that was the watershed, because I had just been unable to say it. Mm. And then once we said it, we worked it through. We did our divorce through a mediator, no lawyers involved. I handled the divorce in court by myself. And now my ex and I are still good friends because we have these awesome two kids that we raised together. And everything we do is as a family. Decisions are made as a family still. And as far as who's going to help mom, because my ex is more well off financially. He's still worse as a professional. And I'm retired now, Medicare and all that. And we all help me. Everybody helps me out if I need it.
Oh,
and
I love
and
that.
Unlike others, it's not the daughter. My daughter is very independent, and I'm proud of her. But my son and daughter-in-law take care of a lot of my needs because I'm taking care of their child. And my grandson is, I do a lot of help with them and raising. As a matter of fact, I'll be moving in with them next year when they move away.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'll be going with them. It's the
family. Well, we'll miss you here, Jeanette. I know that, but I thank you for that call and that perspective.
Yeah,
that was a wonderful story. Thanks, Jeanette.
Yeah, and so I guess once you go through the gray divorce, Andrew, how do you take the first step? You got to rebuild your life, right? And you heard Jeanette say it worked out great for her, but they did a lot of planning with her now ex-husband, and the family sort of stepped up, and it's been sort of family decisions. It sounds like that's a good thing.
Well, it worked out great for Jeanette, and sounds like she really came through the process well. Planning and education is key. You know, when I work with people before, during, and after divorce, you know, we really want to come to a settlement agreement that sets them up on a firm financial foundation for the rest of their life. It's not always going to be as much money, but if you put your life first and adopt maybe a life-centered approach to your financial planning, which is a little different than traditional financial planning, which is all about the money and the number and reaching that number. When you go through divorce, you know, your net worth dropped, but you're reassessing your life and you're realizing what really brings happiness. And Lauren, I'm sure you're familiar with the Harvard study of adult development. You know, it's relationships. It's not just exercise or money that bring happiness. It's relationships and connections with others. And you can live certainly a happier life after gray divorce if you're following the interests that you may have put aside for many years, which don't cost a lot. If you're getting out in the community or spending more time with your family, that can all lead to a happier life, even with less money. But I wanted to point out something that that Jeanette said about the emotional component, because it is a key component in divorce. You know, you've got the legal component, the financial component, and the emotional, and they all tie together. And in the divorce world, we've got an expression called divorce brain. And that's when all these emotions are really sadness, anger, resentment, all these emotions can be playing. And that doesn't factor well into making a calm, logical, financial decision with regards to, you know, how coming to an agreement, which is why so many cases go on too far in the legal process and get bogged down and can lead to harm both emotionally and financially. So I'm a big proponent of divorce therapy, licensed marriage family therapists, and divorce coaching. A team approach, I think, is needed. And Lauren, perhaps you could speak to this. I think a team approach is needed where the legal, the financial, and the emotional are dealt with. And paradoxically, it's less expensive because you're hiring professionals like financial people and therapists who charge less than an attorney. Mm-hmm. So you can get more for less than the price of one.
I wanted to bring in another caller now. Susan from Philly has been on the line for a bit and wanted to jump into the conversation. Susan, you're on Studio 2. What's your perspective?
Hi, good morning. I am a family law attorney in Philadelphia. I practice at Legal Aid, and I've been through my own divorce about 14 or so years ago. I'm in my late 50s, so it wasn't necessarily over 50 divorce, but I was a late mom. I adopted a child at 41, my ex-husband and I. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about the impact of divorce on children and how it can be so beneficial for parties to separate and divorce rather than live in a home where either party or both parties are unhappy, stressed, fighting, not communicating well, and the child is being raised in that environment. For me, leaving my marriage was like a death, right? I thought I would have this life with this person whom I love greatly, but realized that we were never going to be okay. And that the way that we were communicating and living was causing such stress on me and our child. We divorced when she was in first grade, we separated when she was in first grade. And I'm so thankful that we did. And I think that she has been able to see me as a role model for not putting up with something that doesn't fit you, that doesn't feel good, for not allowing someone to speak to you in a way that you don't think is respectful. Even now, when her dad and I try and communicate, it's not awesome. And she has seen me like shut that down. And I think it helps her believe in herself and have confidence in herself as a woman. And, you know, with all my clients, I represent a lot of survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault and trafficking. And even when that is not a part of a difficult marriage, it can be really beneficial for the whole family.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you so much, Susan.
Yeah, thank you so much. And you know, maybe we can bring one more caller in because this sort of, leads to that. But I want to get Lauren an opportunity to respond to what Susan had to say before we bring in another caller, because the children, especially if they're still young children, school-age children, teenagers still in the house, it does make a difference, as Susan was talking about Lauren.
Yeah, she is absolutely right. As I alluded to before, a lot of people tend to stay together for the children, and that's not always the best move. If there's a lot of conflict, arguing, negativity, or sort of cold relationships in a family, in a household, children pick up on that, and that's the part that's harmful for children, more so than the divorce itself needs to be. It can be the conflict in the home that is really the problem. And so when we see parents who have a lot of conflict separate, the children end up seeing much happier, healthier families. They have better relationships with both parents. They see their families, as Susan was saying, that she is a happier, more confident person, and she's now that kind of role model for her daughter. So teaching our children what is a good relationship and setting those boundaries and those expectations can really be the better move for a lot of children.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about something we haven't touched on fully yet, I think. We talked earlier about how there's this, the financial hit is often uneven when a couple divorces, but I think sometimes the emotional hit can be uneven too. And I'm just curious, Lauren, what the research says about how men and women respond emotionally to divorce.
Yeah. So part of it is who is initiating the breakup. And this is
Yeah.
for divorce and breakups generally, but who's initiating?
Yeah.
That person tends to do a little bit better. And so statistically, we know that about two-thirds, even a little bit more, of divorces are initiated by women. So we do see that there's a hinge there. Basically, it's the I knew it was coming, I already thought about it, I've already processed it, where the other person sometimes can be a little blindsided and it can be a little hard for that person to move on. So we do see that when you initiate a breakup, you tend to move on a little bit easier, a little bit faster. So that's part of it. Another big piece is that women tend to have much bigger and more solid social networks than men do. And Andrew alluded to this a little bit. Yeah, so women take more of the financial hit, men take more of the social hit. Women are what we call kin keepers. They tend to do the work of maintenance and facilitating relationships in ways that men don't. Women will even do it for their male partners to say, you should call your mother, you haven't spoken to her, or you should go out with the guys, you haven't seen them in a while, or your sister's not doing well, you should give her a call. So women tend to do the work in relationships. And so when a couple splits up, women tend to have those better relationships already, and they are still doing that work to maintain them. Men don't have that muscle to have that same kind of relationship to reach out to know how to do that in that same way. And so women, we see across the lifespan, women just tend to have more intricate, more solid, more dependable, closer friendships and relationships with friends and family than men do. And so they have those people to rely on, and that men just don't to the same extent.
Yeah, I want to bring in another caller. We have Leslie from Philly on the line. Leslie, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hello, hello, and thank you so much for taking my call. I just want to just say, number one, Susan, absolutely yes. My parents divorced when I was 13. My dad actually initiated it, and I will say this to you: my father became a better father after that. He didn't move far. You know, everything kind of stayed the same, if you will. And I will say this: I'm 50.
Oh.
Children, they're one's in college, one's in boarding school. But I didn't get married as a younger person because I don't think I ever saw my parents organically happy, and so I just really didn't know what those ingredients were. I just knew I didn't want to do that kind of work when I was younger to lead to this place right here because I wouldn't be a great divorcee. However, my question though is, because now I'm in this space, I'm an empty nester basically, and I'm looking for, I want kind of connection. And as a 51-year-old, I'm not dating a 22-year-old. So the people that are, you know, men that are in that milieu, if you will, how many of them, or do you have data or any kind of facts on this or thoughts on it? How many of them, these great divorcees, are actually looking to get remarried or
Ooh, good
develop,
question.
and what kind of trauma do they suffer, and how quickly do they heal?
Yeah, Leslie
Good
from
question.
Philly, good
Thank you.
questions.
So I don't know who wants to raise their hand and take a crack at that. There's a lot there. Andrew,
Andrew,
why don't
yeah.
you go ahead and help Leslie out?
I don't have any statistics on the number of gray divorcees that remarry, but what I will say is that second marriages have even higher divorce rates than first marriages,
Yeah.
and third marriages have even higher divorce rates than second marriages. So this is actually another contributing factor to the incidence of divorce among older people is that sometimes it's a second or third marriage which have higher incidence of divorce than first marriages.
Yeah, Lauren, what did you? Yeah, I think you wanted to add something to
Yeah.
that conversation.
So yeah, absolutely. So my work in older adults is actually in older adult repartnering more so than the divorce and the split up. So I very much just sit in a world of people in their 50s, 60s, 70s looking for a partner. So I could talk about this all day. You know, it's complicated in that about 15% or so of older adults are actively looking for a new partner. Casually looking, it kind of gets gray, like what is looking? So the definitions are a little hard here. I will say part of the issue for older adult repartnering is the gender ratio imbalance. So by the time you hit age 60, there's about 1.5 times more women than there are men. By that time you hit 75, there's about 3.5 times more women than there
Wow.
are. Age demographic. So the older you get, for women, it does get harder. For men, they have a great time. They have lots of opportunity. But there are a number of really great people out there looking for a new relationship. For a lot of people, So Andrew's talking about the divorce rate gets higher. It does. For every subsequent marriage, the divorce rate goes up. One of the other things, though, is a lot of older adults aren't looking to get remarried. They are looking for a companion. They are looking for someone to go to dinner with, to travel with, to spend a weekend gardening, maybe celebrate holidays. A lot of people are looking for more of a companion, maybe living together, maybe not. Really popular for older adults is what we call living apart together. So having a long-term committed relationship, and you each have your own homes, like your own space, do your own thing. And so that tends to work pretty well for older adults. So there are a lot of opportunities. You don't have to go into this thinking, I need to get married, or everybody wants to get married. If that's something you want, then that's great. And if that's not something you want, that's okay too. There are a lot of choices.
Well, we have to leave the conversation here, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And let me thank our guests. Lauren Harris is an assistant professor of human development and family studies at the University of New Hampshire. Lauren, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
And Andrew Hatherly is a certified divorce financial analyst and host of the Gray Divorce podcast. Andrew, wonderful insights this hour.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And now it's time to reveal our Studio 2 DJ of the day song selection. Al Banks, hit it.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Oh, of course. How could we not choose that one? When I'm 64 by the Beatles from 1967. It was, by the way, one of the first songs Paul McCartney wrote. He wrote this song, and this is mind-blowing, when he was 14 years old.
Well, thought that far ahead. By the way, thank you to Heidi from Arden, Delaware, and also Suzanne for choosing that song and being our DJs of the day. We appreciate you.
We also appreciate our producers, Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you for joining us.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?